Happy, happy Halloween. This is the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. And in this episode, as we do on Halloween and Christmas of every year, we have a little bit of a compilation for you. So we will have four segments here from previous episodes: vampires, monster movies, demonic possession, and the do's and don'ts of horror movies. Check the show notes for timestamps if you want to skip to one of the other ones. Every host from the Hollywood Outsider over the years is represented on this episode. Myself, Aaron Peterson, Troy Heinrichs, Amanda Sink, John Davenport, and the original foursome of myself, Scott Clark, Brian Williams, and Justin McCumber, who has passed away. So I hope everyone has a wonderful Halloween and safe time out there. Don't do anything too crazy. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. I think it's fun to have this little mishmash of different hosts and different topics. And it's always fun around spooky season. Let's get on the show. That was ridiculous. I'm sorry. Topic this week, are vampires still scary? Really? Are vampires even scary? And I think Nosferatu out of the equation, just because that's probably the one where I will say yes. Outside of 30 Days of Night, I can't remember another vampire movie in the last 20 years that scared me. So that's why I'm asking. Do you find vampires scary in any way, shape, or form still? Or did Twilight ruin them forever?
Oh, Twilight didn't ruin them forever. Definitely gave him a bad name, but...
Depends on how you play them, right? The whole idea of werewolves, vampires, monsters, demons, all this other stuff, it all comes from the ancient stories of old about how people were invaded by monsters and they kind of did all these scary things.
Not having control of your own faculties, right?
Not having control. The whole thing is all about how people couldn't accept the natural evil that's within people. And when you lean on that, if you lean on the origins of like the fact that these are real people doing something that just turns out to be a little bit turned up to 11 a bit, it makes it even worse. But when they ground it in that it's a serial killer and what kind of things a serial killer can do when they're blending into a crowd or when they are convincing people to do what they want them to do, all these things, those are what makes a vampire scary.
Vampires would be scary if they had to like get out of their coffin and be like tiptoeing around the house because they didn't know if someone closed a curtain. That's all.
Start walking around and smoking up the house.
Yeah, because they're not scary. They're not scary at all.
It took us a long time to get here, Troy.
Yeah, that was a long trip.
Fine, cut it out.
All right, try something else.
Take two.
Vampires have never been scary since like the 80s, I would say. Sometime in the 80s, early 90s, there was a complete shift in what the vampire is. And the vampire is the person that I want to sleep with. It became this romanticized, sexualized, fetishized thing that people are just drawn to. And that's what leads to things like Fright Night or The Lost Boys or Vampire Diaries or True Blood, you know, even Buffy and Angel to a degree. So it's just a matter of, you know, now that we've sexualized it to a point that people fantasize about a vampire having sex with them, why am I scared of that?
It's actually a good point. I mean, it took you a while, but you got to a good point. Yeah. I mean, if you really think about it, now granted, I will say that's really how Dracula was originally told, right? It was a romanticized story. So people like kind of borrow off that. But the monster of it was much more terrifying in Dracula as opposed to what we see today. And I've never really understood the romantic aspects of it. What are you falling in love with? Somebody who just sucks the blood of randos? Like, that's hot to you? I mean, he can't be faithful because he's got to suck everybody's blood and he's not picky.
Well, that's just the thing, right? It's not a matter of the vampire having to be, lack of a better term, monogamous with the person that they bite, right? Because the vampire needs to eat. It needs to drink blood. And what it does is it gets a female and then latches the female to them. So that way the female is actually the person that brings in other bait, right? So you have the female being a temptress, if you will, to find other prey. And that's how the female can then feed their master, is by bringing other prey to them in order to sustain life for the vampire.
If I'm watching a vampire movie, TV show, whatever, I need someone who's evil. I I want them to be likable in a way, because I think that helps. You know, Jerry Dandridge in either Fright Night, Kellan Farrell or Chris Sarandon, either one of them wears that well, right? It's about being smooth and kind of seductive in a way, but also a complete monster when it's time. And yeah, that's just, that can be, because it's disarming. And I think disarming can be terrifying in many ways. I think maybe Kellan Farrell is probably the last time I saw a vampire that really was scary, or was intimidating. I don't even know if I can use the word scary, but intimidating for sure, because I was fearful for the other characters because he was such a monster. And too often they kind of neuter him, especially these days, because they want you to like him a little bit. They want you to kind of root for him. And I don't know if I want to root for a vampire. I mean, they murder people. That's kind of the only way they can live, is if they murder people. Inherently, I think that's a bad thing.
They don't have to. They could drink pig's blood like Angel did, but...
Yeah, but he didn't like that.
Yeah, he didn't like it. Wasn't a cool way to do it.
Vampires are like the embodiment of temptation to some degree when they're portrayed like this. People get to enjoy the thrill of surrender, the fantasy of being chosen by a creature like this. That's why it's so easy to romanticize vampires. But it's, again, when you look at it from the point of view of it, of let's throw it into like a true crime aspect or a serial killer.
True crime
aspect.
Vampire tale. That's interesting. All right.
I'm just saying, like, to look at it from the point of view of like, as if it were a true crime thing, what you'd be looking at is a serial killer. And a lot of times serial killers are these disarming people. They're these people who are able to talk their way into situations they have no business being in. And in a lot of cases, if you look at like history, take Ted Bundy, for example, women were throwing themselves at Ted Bundy when he was being put on trial. The same thing with Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker. And again, he had a name like the Night Stalker. So you compare that to the modern day vampire and it works. And it works in reality for all those reasons.
But still with a serial killer concept and then all these people throwing themselves at Ted Bundy, right? It's still a sexual drive component.
Exactly. Like I said, the embodiment of temptation, the thrill of surrendering your body to somebody. So that's why it's so easy to kind of like make this thing. But I think Aaron's on a good point. And it was a point that I was going to bring up later anyway, is that Jerry Dandridge is a great vampire, because he is, not only is he that serial killer kind of person, but he's charming. He's fun to watch on screen. He's funny. When he lets go all the way, and he is a scary creature.
Oh man, in the first Fright Night, one of my favorite scenes in the whole movie, if not my favorite scene, is when he, you know, if you've never seen the movie, it's a kid's next door neighbor is a vampire, and he basically comes to fall in love with his girlfriend because she looks like someone from his past. They never really established exactly who that is, unless you read the book, then you can find out more. So they're in a dance club scene, and basically they're trying to escape him, and he ends up seducing her on the dance floor, essentially. And it's just, you know, watching him manipulate her and his just sheer glee about how horrible it's making Charlie Brewster, the kid next door, feel. And it's just a really cool and cruel scene that really just shows you how evil he can be and how manipulative he is. Even though, I mean, it's the 80s, you kind of forget totally that she's totally a teenage girl and this is weirder than it should be. But it's a great scene, and it really does like illustrate how menacing a vampire should be. Another one I love is, and nobody's ever seen it but me, apparently, but Vamp.
It rings a bell.
With Grace Jones, where... It's like an underground strip club.
Yes.
Oh, my God. So it's like two guys. They got to go out and find a stripper. And so they find this underground. It's very 80s, very pastel, very campy in a lot of ways. But Grace Jones is like the head vampire, and it's a club full of vampires. And they just kind of pick on people that no one's going to miss, essentially. And she's vicious. I mean, she is a vicious vampire. And I really, really thought she was great in terms of, she was very seductive when she could be lured people in, and then she would just devour them like a meal. Such a good, good vampire flick, I thought. Plus, you deal with friendships. That's fun.
Going the other direction, Innocent Blood from John Landis.
That was a terrible movie.
I had so much fun with it when it first came out.
Did you really?
Yeah.
That's when I realized, like, John Landis is not a good director anymore. That and Beverly Hills Cop 3. Those are the two things.
You may be onto something there, because I have rewatched it, and I do own it on digital somewhere, and I do rewatch it from time to time whenever I'm drawing or something. It's not really great, but it goes back to that. The other thing people end up doing, if it's not the fact that they are romanticizing vampires, they like to turn vampires into anti-heroes. So there, it's another way of like taking the teeth out of what should be a scary creature.
I see what you did there.
Yeah.
I see what you did there. They're taking a teeth out of a vampire. Can you imagine a gummy vampire? That would suck.
That would be terrible.
You just have to nub on them.
Yeah. But again, it's like that. It's that whole idea of just making them just likable. And it doesn't work. It doesn't work in the long run. I enjoy that movie because it's terrible. It's one of those reasons why I do like it. I'm like, that's a bad movie. And I have fun with it for that reason. But it's part of the epidemic of bad vampire movies when they lose track of what it is that the vampire is supposed to be. Now, on the flip side of that, you have a similar sort of idea of an anti-hero vampire, but scary in her own right. And that's Ellie from Let the Right One In.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason why I find her to be a terrifying idea for a vampire is because you have basically a 10-year-old girl who looks like she's innocent, sweet, disarming, all these other things, but she is an absolute destroyer of people if she wants to be.
Now, are you talking the foreign film or the remake? Actually, I think they're both pretty good.
They're both pretty good, but I love the foreign film.
Yeah, I love the idea, even though the Kirsten Dunst character in Interview with the Vampire played with that really well too, but Let the Right One In really did it justice, because it's something to see like a kid trapped in that body and just can never ever grow up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I mean, and that just creates so much more anger, plus the immaturity. You never really ever gain maturity because your body never went through the changes. So you're kind of always, it's just a really cool take on the vampire motif.
Absolutely. And again, that's what makes her terrifying, is just how disarming she is with her vulnerability, because that just makes her naturally more vulnerable. But if you don't treat her right, she will destroy you.
What I never found scary is Tom Cruise's Lestat. I always thought,
I don't think he was ever supposed to be scary.
He was just lame. There were people that Anne Rice praised his performance, and I was just really. I mean, it looks like cosplay. I never felt like Tom Cruise was any better than cosplay.
I mean, that's because that's his role in that movie, I think. It's he's not there to be scary. He's not there to be the vampire.
But isn't he? I mean,
he is a vampire.
Isn't he? He's vampire of that whole Anne Rice world. Now, I heard the TV version is a lot more menacing, but I mean, Tom Cruise, I thought, was weak sauce. It's not like Les Grossman. I thought Les Grossman was more scary than Lestat was. Chopper Thunder reference.
I was trying to put it together. I'm like, wait a minute, I know this one.
And maybe I don't go the deep route on a lot of this stuff, because I've just been more of like, vampires aren't scary, so I go with the comical side of things for the most part.
Like, what's a good funny vampire? Once Bitten, that's a decent.
I mean, Buffy, obviously.
Well, I knew that was, that's, yeah, sure.
You know, but I mean, like, The Lost Boys. I mean, so not scary. See? Kind of scary, but not really scary.
I'll be honest. I would totally be Jason Patrick in that movie. If Jamie Gertz were like, I'm his age, and I'm like, all right, go ahead. Let me join your lame-ass bicycle gang. That's fine.
Lame-ass bicycle gang?
I would. I'm a total sucker. I would. Plus, Kiefer Sutherland was cool as hell back then. Like, he was badass.
Cool. Oh, everybody was cool in that little group of vampires of his. Everybody was.
But you didn't find it scary.
Great twist at the end. Great twist at the end.
Oh, with the dad?
Or yeah.
The stepdad?
The stepdad.
Could it be stepdad? Boyfriend? Whatever the hell he was?
Right.
See, the thing about Lost Boys is it's one of those perfect 80s movies. It's not necessarily that it was meant to be scary or meant to be something, you know, anything that it wasn't. But it was in that same vein of like, it was a perfect stepping stone from like Goonies and everything else before it to step into like, now we're going to do Goonies, but with monsters.
Okay. And now you're just being ridiculous.
He's not wrong, because it's
how is it Goonies with vampire? Sell me this pitch.
It is It is literally the okay, if I was the Goonies and I'm running around doing treasure hunts and pirates, and it's a thing that happens when you're like 8 to 12 years old or 8 to 14, right? And now I'm in high school and I've moved to a different town, and it's still a coming of age movie, but you're just now at a different age cycle. So you're like dealing with high school shit and you're like trying to find a girlfriend and not being accepted. So here's this cool gang that
sounds
I'm
like
joined.
A totally different movie.
Yeah, I really couldn't have sold my idea better than Troy that just did, honestly.
Well, he sold it wrong because it's not Goonies at all. It's just a coming of age tale, but there's no like group.
It is Goonies. He's saying it's in that genre of a coming of age story.
It has a Goonie in it. Does that count? I mean, maybe that helps you, but that's about as close to Goonies as Lost Boys is. The only one eyed Willie in Lost Boys is. Never mind. That was going to be a bad Jason.
All right, that
Patrick
was
reference.
Whoa. I can't even see you in your head right now, but I almost know where that was going to go, and that was a problem.
That's why I was laughing.
But even like back then, it was still the cheesy sexualization of it all. I mean, I'm thinking, was that Alyssa Milano in Brace with a Vampire?
Oh my God.
You know, you pull that nugget out. It's like,
that's a nugget. All right.
Nobody watched that for the vampire.
Nobody watched that for the vampire.
Not a single person. No.
But then you fast forward to something like a True Blood, right? Where it's like, and then there are Vampire Diaries on TV.
I fast forward Embrace the Vampire too quite a bit.
That tape got worn out.
Sorry. Continue your thought.
But no, it's just that it's always been a sexualized thing since like the 80s. And I think that's why.
No, it's been longer than the 80s.
I mean, it was romanticized and sexualized in Dracula. I mean, in the books, literature, movies, it's always been a thing. But it takes away from the horror of it all for me a lot of the times. Mm-hmm. That's all. Now we're from the outside in topic. John, this is basically your episode. What makes a great monster movie?
The best way to describe it would be it's a disaster film that's perpetuated by a monster in the center of it. Then that monster can be large. It could be small. It could be microscopic. But there's a creature in the center of it. And they can be funny, they can be scary, they can be fantasy, they can be science fiction, it could be anything.
Is it just kaiju and giant bugs, or do werewolves and vampires count? What are the rules here? Because I've really debated this, and I kind of feel like werewolves should be in here, but vampires should not, because they can control who they are eating, number one, where werewolves are kind of driven by primal instinct. So to me, that is where the line of monster movies should be, is if it's driven by instinct versus intelligence, I guess.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. So vampires, no, not a creature feature. But werewolves, yes, a creature feature, because it's more of a force of nature. So anything that can act more like a force of nature would be your creature feature or your monster movie.
I'm going to include vampires. The definition,
but they're people, though.
But listen, because definition of a monster,
you can't see it, John, but a finger is pointing my way,
is an imaginary creature that is typically large, ugly, and frightening. And I don't know if you've seen a vampire in real life, but you haven't, because they don't exist. They're imaginary. They're definitely frightening because they won't suck your blood. And
I kind of like that part.
Does it turn you on?
A little bit.
I think they're fascinating monsters, and they are scary in the way that they can be done. I mean, even if you look at things like Frankenstein, like that's a monster to me. There's so many different things that can be considered a monster. They just have to be imaginary. They can't be reality based.
Yeah, but the ultimate thing is that the monster has to have a lot more to do or feel more like a force of nature. So maybe a vampire can apply if we're talking like a movie of 30 Days of Night. That movie is more of a creature feature than it is a vampire story.
Yeah, I mean everybody, you have your own interpretation of what a monster movie is. That's everybody kind of runs in their own head in that one. Vampires, to me, anything where they can control it, I don't find them to be monsters so much as just villains, because they're a murderer. Then they just have a cooler way of doing it. You know, where a vampire, as long as they can control themselves and they don't have to eat people, then you're not really a monster. You're just a serial killer in my mind, to me. But I get what you're saying. I mean, they're ugly and scary.
Well, I feel like there's certain like subgenres of monster movies, I guess, where we could categorize them, like where we would have these creature features, or where we would have specifically like giant monsters like bugs and Godzilla and, you know, things like that.
Love giant bug movies.
I do not. But I still think that they fall under, for me, they still fall under monster movies. It's just then subcategorized, kind of like horror movies are. You have all different types of horror movies, but they can still vary pretty drastically between them. But I think the central theme is just that monster movies have some sort of a creature who is like an antagonist. And, you know, they can be horror demons of the night, or they could be the monsters and bugs, but typically you're not going to combine them.
Well, in the Venn diagram of movies, I mean, yeah, there's creature features that are horror. There are creature features that are comedy. Like they all kind of overlap each other. So I can see what you're saying about that.
When it comes to monsters, where do we stand on like movies like The Birds or Bats or anything where it's just animals devouring people? There was a Killer Bee movie, The Swarm, I think it was. You know, where you have normal size insects that are terrorizing people, would that be considered a monster movie?
Yeah, I do believe it would be, because it's something that is behaving like a force of nature versus it being a single creature or something like that. So people can't really have an effect on it, but they have to survive it by means.
I'm not really a good voice on this because bug movies, I don't watch them. I watch the Eight-Legged Freaks.
Well, he also said bats. You can think about that.
Yeah, or the birds. You know the birds.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. It's weird because when I think of The Birds, I think of it as a classic film. I don't think of it as anything. I think of it more as a horror film.
There's a lot of classic films that are monster movies.
Right, but I think of it more like a horror film. That's just how I've always categorized it in my mind. I've never thought about it being a monster movie, which I mean, not to say that it can't be a horror movie and a monster movie. Obviously, those coincide in some respect. Yeah. But I've just never considered it like, I've never thought about it instinctually like, oh, this is a monster movie. But it's not like I'm opposed to it being a monster movie. It still falls in my personal parameters. So.
So when you personally think, quote unquote, monster movie, what does make it great for you? However you define monster movie, what does make it great for you? Like what gets your blood pumping and whatever?
I love one where the monster or the creature is something that I root for, where I'm like, yes, do it. Destroy the humanity.
Yeah, I don't care. Screw the human race.
Even if their actions are innately evil, I just like, I want to cheer them. Like, I just love this creature, this thing so much that I want it to succeed in whatever it's doing, and I'm cool with it taking out people if that's what it takes.
Really?
Yeah.
Just kill everyone. Okay. Lots of people stomping, innocent bystanders. All right.
To me, it's something where it's the level in which they're asking you to suspend your disbelief. You know, you see Godzilla, he has always had the fire breath or the atomic breath, whatever you want to call it. He's always had it. But In the old Toho movies, when Godzilla does the atomic breath, it looks either like a blue wind or something like that. It doesn't look too cheesy. It's something that could be passable specifically for that time. However, there's another movie with a monster that was sort of like Godzilla, but terrible. And one of the things they did for his fire breath was that, like, they would cut to his head and it would be like his fleshy pink mouth wide open. And you see basically the nozzle of a flamethrower. And all of a sudden I have to, like, deal with the fact that there's an apparatus sticking out of his mouth when it's supposed to be fire breath and not, like, flamethrower sticking out of his head.
I love it.
Like, those are like the things I think about. It's something that says, okay, well, we're going to make this work, but we're not going to ask you to have to look past too many things to make it work in your mind. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Here's what I need from a monster movie to be good. I need a lack of story. I don't want a story.
The people thing just has to go.
Man, get the people out of the way unless they're going to be eaten. That's
seriously.
Really, I don't need your drama. I don't need your life story. Keep it simple. It either needs to be very gory or a little cheesy. I don't like the middle ground. I don't like where you're kind of trying to take it too seriously. I really just like one or the other. It's just where I land. I just don't want my monster movie to be a very serious monster movie. Unless,
what about Eight-Legged Freaks?
See, now that's very cheesy, but I dig it. I dig it. I mean, that's kind of the extreme. I almost consider that more a comedy. It is a monster movie, but it's more a comedy than what I would normally go for. You know, there's no fear there. But you have stuff like Slither and things like that
you know, Gremlins is a great monster movie. I mean, I just like movies where it kind of either teeters on the line, but it kind of picks a side. It's either a little gory or a little cheesy, but either way, I want my monster movies to have fun.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Like, I can watch a horror movie and I want it. That's fine. Be serious all you want. But when it's a big giant monster or a bunch of little monsters, I need to feel like I'm having fun, because that's how I root for the monster, because they don't usually have a personality. So make the movie fun, whether it be tight pacing, whether it be just fun destructive kills, or, you know, not necessarily city destroying, because
on people's faces.
Marvel has killed me on the city destroying. But yeah, stomp on some people. Stomp on some people. Some nice people. Some lovely people. Stomp on them. Make me go, ooh, I can't believe you did that. Fun monster.
I saw this really funny meme after Godzilla came out, and it's with a dinosaur. It's Godzilla, obviously, walking inside a house, and somebody tells him, please wipe your feet. And behind him, there's like a trail of dead bodies like attached to his feet that he wiped off. It's so funny.
So give me your most intense memory of watching a monster movie in terms of, this is when you had a really, really tragic or horrifying time watching a monster movie.
So the one that comes to mind the most is 1981's American Werewolf in London.
Mm. Oh, the transformation scene?
Oh, well, it's not even the transformation scene. It's the scene near the end when you see the werewolf walking down the street, which I will contend that it is impossible to find a better werewolf than that one on the silver screen. Like, it, especially for 1981, that werewolf looked amazing.
Yeah, it did.
So here I am. I'm in the single digits of age. I'm not sure exactly how old I was, but my brother and I were watching it, and yeah, I'm spending the whole time going, that is so cool. I can't believe how he looks. And I'm doing the best I can to remind myself, it's just a movie. It's just a movie. It's just a movie. It's not real. It's not real. And then we get done with the movie, and then it was just around Halloween time, and then the news station that we were, like, the channel that we were watching flips over to this story about how, and this is Panama, no less. So it flips up how a neighboring town actually had a werewolf in the town.
What?
And it was attacking people. Yeah. Like, it was a whole, like, news report. And like, I watched the first, like, 15, 20 minutes of it, because, like, I was just ripped. We just finished watching a werewolf story. Like, and we're talking about real werewolves. I ended up sprinting to my room and trembling under my covers the majority of the night. And it wasn't until, like, the next morning when my brother, like, was eating breakfast, and I did not sleep a wink, and I looked like a truck hit me, and I was about to get sick and all this other stuff, and he's like, are you okay? And I'm like, but this, I heard the werewolf he's like, there's no werewolf, Johnny. When it finished, when you left, it actually said that the whole thing was made up, and it was just to scare us for Halloween.
Fake news!
That's awesome! They really did that to terrify people?
Yeah, they really did. It was like their version of
Orson Welles,
like, right there as a news story about how a werewolf was terrorizing a town.
That's really cool.
I love that. Fake news.
Yeah, they had the legit newscasters and everything talking about it, and they did, like, a real production of it.
That's amazing. I love that. Now, you brought up American Werewolf in London. I got a question.
Uh-huh.
Better transformation scene, American Werewolf in London or The Howling?
Ooh.
Because both of those are terrifying in their own way.
Yeah, that's really, really close. I'm going to have to go with American Werewolf in London.
I'm going with The Howling. I remember watching that thing, and I couldn't sleep for like 2 days. Because even though in my mind, I'm still to this day, I'm yelling at the TV like, D. Wallace, why are you standing there watching him transform? Leave. You should have left hours ago. But it's just, it's one of those two are the best. Still, it's 2019? Those two are still the best transformation scenes in movies for werewolves. I don't understand how that's still a thing. Why hasn't it been beaten yet?
That's a good point.
No idea.
Those are good.
No idea. But I will contend that those are the two of the best werewolves on the screen, too, were those two. And those are 100% practical effects.
Mm-hmm. I miss the days, man. Practical effects for the way. All right, Amanda, what was your most intense memory of watching a monster movie?
Well, and I don't know if you guys are going to yell at me because I used a not dinosaur-y type monster.
It's your monster movie, yeah. So you choose.
You used vampires, didn't you?
I didn't. I used Frankenstein.
If you say Twilight, I'm going to laugh
at
you.
Oh, God, no. It was pretty horrifying, though.
It was when they sparkled, and I'm like, sparkles!
What? But it's the 1931 James Whale Frankenstein, and it's probably one of
the
my...
The 1931 one? Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep, okay. It's one of my favorite Frankenstein iterations.
I think it qualifies.
You think it does?
I think it does.
Oh, good.
It qualifies.
Good. So the scene that I thought was, I just didn't expect.
Hang on a minute. She doesn't have to qualify her ass to you. It's her monster movie memory.
No, but I'm happy that he's on my side.
All right. What is it?
So it is the scene where Boris Karloff is playing the monster in this one. And he's talking to this little girl. Her name's Maria. And they're playing at the water. Did you guys see this movie?
Yes.
Okay.
But I'll be honest, I saw it when I was a kid. So it's been a long time.
I mean, even if you go watch like the clip now, it's still, I guess the context helps when you build up to that moment. Because you feel bad for this Frankenstein. Like, you really do feel for him. Mm-hmm. And in this moment, he's like having this really sweet moment with this little girl, Maria. And they're playing by the water. And he sees this flower floating in the water that she kind of plops over. And so they're just throwing flowers in the water. Well, he sees it float, and the way that it's done, and it's so beautifully done, you kind of feel for him. You're like, oh, he's having a very sweet sentimental moment with this little girl. Well, then, because he saw the flower float, and he's kind of, I mean, he's obviously not an intellectual being, he picks up the little girl and he throws her in the water, hoping that she'll float, but she dies. And it's just like horrifying because it's like, dear God, man, what did you just do?
Technically, he's right.
I mean, she should have floated. Yeah. Did you not have like swimming lessons? But it was, to me, it was the emotional impact of that scene because I did not expect him to do that.
That's tragic.
And it was, and you felt so bad for him. He didn't understand what he had done.
And he looks traumatized, if I remember
he
right.
Does,
like
he
is horrified at what
he
did.
And he just escapes. He just goes away. He doesn't try to help her out. And that was the thing that was also pretty intense about that moment. Like, it didn't scare me necessarily. It was just like, oh, wow, this really happened. Because he just didn't know what to do. So she just didn't float.
That's a great pick. Honestly, I would have never even thought about that one. Were you always a fan of Boris Karloff? Because he's a very, and these days, unappreciated actor. Which is weird to say. He's a classic.
I mean, I'm not like, oh my God, this is one of my favorite people ever. But in Frankenstein, for sure. You know what I mean? Like, this is one of my favorite iterations. So I felt like he did it justice in a way that not many people have done. Because he gave it heart. Mm-hmm. And I always felt like the Frankenstein story needed more heart in it. And in a lot of the iterations, it's just...
Special effects.
The monster is just always... Yeah, but he's always like, and kind of like a dinosaur. Like, he's trying to be like Godzilla. That's how I picture him.
There's no humanity at all.
Right. And in this story, we have something completely different. So
that's good. Mine is, so I don't know if you guys are big fans of this, but like in the 50s and 60s, no, I wasn't alive, but I'm not anyone that was. But they made a lot of these movies where radiation causes things to become monstrous.
Yeah.
You guys remember that? I mean, that's how Godzilla came around. But so I remember I was sitting at home one night. My mom worked at nights. So I was a latchkey kid, which, you know, means I was home by myself a lot. And we didn't have many channels. So basically you got whatever you got. And it's late one night. I think it was like a Friday or Saturday night. And I'm watching this black and white movie. And I'm like, all right, well, black and white movie ain't going to scare me. I'd already watched Friday the 13th at this point. I see Nightmare on Elm Street. All these movies. You ain't going to scare me, people. Let's watch this crazy old ass horror movie. It's called Them.
Mm.
I don't know if you guys have ever seen Them.
I've heard you talk about Them before.
Oh my God, it terrified the shit out of me. Giant ants. Mutated giant killer ants. And I don't know why, but I couldn't sleep. I had bedbugitis, you know, where you basically are just like feeling the covers and like, it's all over me. I had that all night long. Every time I saw an ant, I stepped on it twice. I saw ant hills for like weeks and I would step on those. I just didn't care. I'm like, I'm going to take you out before you take me out.
You were the Godzilla of the ants.
I mean, I think John can go along with me. Everyone that's seen Godzilla has done the rawr when you approach an ant hill. Right? I mean,
yeah.
Because it's like, huh, you're the people. Rawr!
That must be like a boy thing, because I've seen the Godzilla back to like the 1954 or whatever it was one.
Rubber suit boys?
And I haven't stepped on anthills like, rawr!
You're missing some of the best things in life.
I got to try it out.
As soon as you see an anthill, pretend like you're Godzilla. It's going to be a whole different experience.
Funny. It's rather liberating.
It is. And to this day, I go out on my way. I don't kill spiders.
You should.
I try not to unless, you know, and they're in my house because I pay the mortgage. They don't. You know, I don't kill animals. I don't hurt animals or anything like that. But if I see ants, they're done.
Do you have like a phobia now? Like PTSD?
That movie freaked me out. I had never seen a giant bug movie before. And that's like, I'm not really afraid of bugs, but giant bugs, I'm kind of leery of. Not a fan. Don't like them. Turns out they freak me out. I don't like it. I don't want something that I've probably, you know what it is? I've killed so many of them just by walking down the street. I'm terrified this will happen and they're going to come back for all of us. That's what I'm afraid of.
Well, I think that's kind of what is so, I guess, scary, why we like monster movies so much, is because a lot of times it's something that we can identify with. Like, we can identify something that's reality-based. Like, with Godzilla, we can kind of see it as, like, a dinosaur or something. But it's, like, bigger than we could ever imagine, and we don't really know how to cope with fighting something that is so monstrously bigger than we are. We have nothing that we can do to defend ourselves. We're used to, like, you know, I'll fight it myself, or I can be a man and I can do it, right, or I'll shoot it.
I'm going to move.
None of this is going to work with giant monsters or, you know, undead monsters or whatever it might be.
Agreed. I still freak out watching that movie. And the effects aren't that great.
No, they're not. They're terrible. They're so bad.
But as a kid, for whatever reason, man, it's just like, I'd never seen a giant ant before. And I'm like, holy crap, that's scary. And that's probably why The Mist is probably my favorite Stephen King book, is because it's really about giant bugs. And giant, for whatever reason, bugs don't freak me out, but giant bugs always freak me out.
I feel that way about Jell-O bolts since the original Blob.
Really? Are you serious or are you joking? I can't.
Well, no, I'm being funny, but still, that original Blob, like that whole scene when the farmer's got it on the stick and he's like, well, I'll just hold the stick down, hold it at the bottom end of the stick, and then it just shoots up the stick and swallows his hand.
Oh, it's great.
Like, that scene in itself, I'm like, ah!
That's a great one. I love the old ones. They don't really do the monster movies like that anymore.
No, they don't.
They're so worried about special effects, they don't remember to just make them fun. Remember The Stuff? Do you remember The Stuff?
I didn't see The
Stuff. Vaguely, but yes.
I don't even know what the monster was. It was just like yogurt.
It was like a white foam.
It was like yogurt or something. It was weird. I don't even know what genre that would be in.
No, it's a monster movie. When I was doing my research for this, it came up on my list, and I'm like, oh yeah, that one. It was like a shaving cream that killed you or something.
Yeah, that's what it was.
Shaving cream.
Give me that's what. Yeah, it was like shaving cream. I don't remember. It was a weird movie. It was weird. Now we're going to our From the Outside In topic this week, and we wanted to have a little bit of fun. Halloween's coming up. We always kind of do like a Halloween topic. We're themed. We like to theme it every now and again. So this is basically our horror movie survival guide. Yeah, that just happened.
Horror.
We're going to do the do's and don'ts of horror movies. But before we get to that, which is basically like every time we yell at somebody, don't do something, we have to say what the do should be. So we're going to do that. But before we get to it, why the hell does Hollywood still use so many cliches in horror films anyway? I mean, characters are constantly doing dumb things. Do studios just want us yelling at the screen? Does anyone have any? Scott, what do you think? Do you think they just keep putting cliche after cliche after cliche because they know it works, or what?
Well, I think it does work to some extent, but for a couple of reasons. I mean, first off, what's cliche to us is a fresh idea to somebody else. Even though it's been done a million times, not everybody has seen every movie. Not everybody has watched nearly as many movies as critics like us do. There's always going to be some kind of new audience. And the second reason, I think, is that just some cliches just are never going to die, even though they're done over and over again, and we're just always going to remember them. They're just not going to go anywhere.
200 episodes, and Scott finally said us instead of you guys. Good for you. Nice job, Scott.
He's all grown up.
It's like you've been watching movies for years now or something.
Yeah, 4 years.
Wow.
Didn't watch any before that, but...
I know. Brian, what about you? What do you think? Why do they keep doing it to us?
Yeah, they work. I mean, it's just plain and simple. Unfortunately, it works. It's crazy because Scott's exactly right. You know, they Is those of us that are more, yeah, that's what's my mind's blown over that. you've got to create some sort of anticipation, and I don't know, they it's so stupid, and it's and those of us that have seen 100 movies, it's obvious to us, and it's old hat, and it doesn't scare us. But the good side of that is the silver lining, so to speak, is when you do see something that is fresh and different, you know, we're so amped about it, we kind of tell everybody else, you know, hey, you got to see this movie. So I don't know. They work. Even though we're expecting it, I think on some level it still works for some of, you know, for those of us that are more, I guess, in tune or astute or whatever you want to call it. But
in stew, is that what you said?
Astute.
Oh, astute. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Because in a stew just seems silly.
Well, I think we're kind of jaded altogether anyway, just with horror movies in general. I was talking to Zach from my show last night when we were recording, and he was talking about how there are horror movies that it's hard to even get him to be even a little bit creeped out anymore. Horror movies are almost comical to him at this point because he's seen so many and nothing scares him anymore. Mm-hmm. But then if you go to any of these movies on opening night, there are hundreds of kids in there that have never seen some of this stuff and are screaming their heads off, having a blast because they're getting freaked out.
That's a really good point. And I got to be honest, I've generally thought of it very selfishly. That's actually a very good point, Scott. I've always thought, well, I've seen this 100 times. Don't they realize that I've seen it 100 times? Make a movie I want to see. Me.
The problem is that there's not a whole lot that's going to freak us out anymore.
Well, I haven't been scared in years, but I still love horror movies. I mean, there's very, very few things that I get unnerved every now and then. Nerve is the word I like to use, because if I can feel my hair tingling on my arms, that to me works. That works a lot more than boo scares and stuff like that. But when characters do dumb things, I don't understand why they still do that, because
you looked around?
But real people in those situations, I've been in, like, well, I guess there are a lot of
them. I don't know. Have you been in a lot of situations where a demon's chasing you through the forest? Because
just like twice.
I mean, I'll be honest, that hasn't yet happened to me, but I'm just one person.
I mean, honestly, in the true scenario, crap your pants and then you cry and as you look at your soiled underwear, right? That's pretty much what happened. And then you die. Yes. Yeah.
The thing is that people do dumb stuff all the time in the real world. So why wouldn't they do something stupid?
Yeah, I mean, have you seen some of these videos where there these practical jokes are being played on people where scare the bejesus, and I watched one guy throw something out of his window and jumped out the window when somebody was scared. It's like he grabbed like a toaster or something and just threw it out the window and then just jumped straight out of it.
Absolutely true. I've seen a number of those where they'll, you know, they'll rig up an elevator so that it'll stop and the lights go out. And when those lights go out, a little girl crawls in looking like a ghost. They turn the light back on. People scream. They jam themselves into a corner and just start praying to God that this thing goes away. I've seen it where they'll put people on a subway and stop it. Lights go off. Lights come back on. Zombies are coming. They freak out. They do dumb things. That's just the nature of humanity, unless you go through some kind of SEAL school training where you get your fear under control. People lose their minds, and I'm sure that if I were walking down a corridor in a hotel and all of a sudden I saw a demon or angry spirit, I would be the first one screaming and just running in mortal terror. That's just what people do.
I've seen one or a couple of those. And my first question is, when these pranks happen, like I saw the one you're talking about where a creepy girl in the elevator, and I saw one where there was a girl on a dock right under a light, and the light is shining down her. Two guys like walk up to her, and then she starts running at them, and they run away screaming because they're freaked out because she looks like the girl from The Ring. What's her name? Mm-hmm. Whatever her name was.
Samara.
Samara, thank you. And all I kept thinking was, now, if they stop dead in their tracks and punch her in the face, is that okay?
Yes. If a little girl ghost enters my elevator, if my reaction isn't to turn around in fear, it is to lash out with a flurry of kicks and punches that would leave her broken.
Come on, man. Go.
And I wouldn't feel an ounce of regret because she had it coming.
Well, I'm saying in the real world, like, can you get arrested? Can you explain that to the cop? Like, hey, she was running at me,
Judge,
looking like
Samara. Watch the tape.
It's on video, yeah.
Watch the tape.
Yep.
I dare you to come.
I didn't ask for this. She just scared the bejesus out of me. My flight or fight reactions kicked in.
Give and my
I just
shoe back.
Kicked the crap out of her.
I mean, I remember seeing a little internet video of a guy walking past one of those big trash bins. And all of a sudden, someone who was inside of it jumps up wearing this costume to scare the person.
Him right in the walking face. Next,
yeah, he just pow, punches him right in the face.
Without even thinking about it.
Without a thought. That's what we do. We either flight or fight. But then, I'm more of a flyer.
Me too. But, my first instinct would never be to punch. I don't think I've ever thrown a real punch.
My first would be to punch and claw and cut. Yeah. Brian and I are
stunned the crap out of them. Then I got a better chance when I haul ass.
Just don't do any of the stuff in Texas because you will get shot.
Yeah.
That is true. Rawr, poof. Oh, shit.
Halloween must suck in
dead.
Texas.
Years ago, I was in San Francisco and on Fisherman's Wharf, there's this bridge going from, you know, it's just a road, you know, it's just got a paved concrete wall. And so it's, you know, it's probably 20, 30 yards long. There's nothing from one end of this cement little bridge to the other. And there was this guy sitting there he was dressed and he had his face painted and stuff, but he was just sitting there with two bushy limbs on both sides of him in the middle of this walkway on the side. And people would walk by and he would just, rawr, you know, open them up and come and get like, he's not even camouflaged. I mean, you can see a person there and he's got these brushes over him, you know, and people just, I guess, because people are so much in their own little world and if they're tourists, they're checking out everything and you know, it's, they don't realize this bush should not be growing in the middle of this concrete bridge.
As a rule, yeah.
But it was brilliant. It's that you're so much, I guess he was just so much in the, you know, in the open that he was actually kind of camouflaged. And it was just hilarious to stand there and watch him scare people as they walk by.
That's funny. All right, well, let's get to our list. Let's get to our do's and don'ts. And we can go as long as you guys got them, as long as they're entertaining, we can do them. Basically, we're going to go round robin until we run out of these. Everyone has a list of things that piss them off when watching a scary movie, when they see characters do something. Clichés that always happen. But we think, as viewers, we always have the right solutions. And generally, we're going to find out if we do or if we're just dumb to begin with. Kind of works like this. For every don't, like, for example, don't open that closet door. Instead, you have to honor a counter, or you have to offer a counter. Do take a baseball bat and swing at the door just to be safe. And you can't just say run outside for every answer because that would just be way too easy. We assume you've ran as much as you can run generally. So we're going to go Justin, Brian, Scott, me. Justin, Brian, Scott, me. So Justin, what's your first do and don't?
Don't try and save stupid friends. They're only going to get you killed. Do let natural selection work itself out.
It's a Darwin advice.
Do not be a hero for dumb people.
Actually, that one, well, mine comes off now. All right, I had that one. All right, who's next? Brian?
Yeah, all right. Don't let's split up.
Yeah.
This is dumb. This is, you know, there's,
we'll cover more ground this way.
right.
Which never makes any sense.
Exactly. There's safety in numbers here. So you got to, you know, do stick together. So even if somebody dies horribly, you A, have a chance to still get away. And B, there's witnesses to back up your obviously unbelievable story.
Yep.
I see a common thread here. Selfish sons of bitches is what you are.
Don't you love it, too, when you do watch a movie and someone says, hey, let's split up, and another person says, no, that's dumb. You're like, yes!
Yeah, but then they still do it, which then I go back to, you're dumb. Why are you so dumb? Scotty?
Don't read a language that you don't understand, a written language that you don't speak or read, especially when it's written on some old document or some dusty old book.
Mm-hmm.
Do go ahead and Google Translate that shit.
No.
I like
you
that.
You do burn it. You cut the book up into pieces. You bury it. You get as far away from it. You don't open the covers past the fleshy hardcover that's all sewn together. No. No, don't even open it. Just
hey, guys, this looks like it was made with human skin.
Oh, no,
let's touch it.
If it don't burn, bury it.
I like Scott's idea. I want to see what it translates to.
Yeah, because it's
you're all going to die.
It's fine, right?
That's funny.
I mean, I was watching the remake of Evil Dead recently, and God, that thing works. Mm-hmm. But as soon as that blonde-haired, bespeckled dude opens the book, right there it says, do not read this. Yes.
Like several
what
times.
Does he do? He goes on to read it all.
He's dyslexic.
He deserves it to die.
He's dyslexic. He has a problem. All right, my first one. Don't stay in the house after you notice your toy clown is dancing on its own or telling or spirit is telling you to get out. Do move the hell out as fast as you can and sell the place to an unsuspecting couple for a profit.
Never mention what happened.
Never mention it. Full disclosure doesn't include dirty clowns and voices in your house. Sorry.
Right.
You're good. Justin?
Don't stand in the middle of the room and look around for what might be coming. Do get into a corner or get by a wall to limit the avenues in which death can come at you.
Check your corners.
Check your six, your corners. Don't stand in the middle of the woods yelling for your friends either.
Peripherals, people. Peripherals.
If your friend ain't with you, consider them dead.
Get new friends.
Get new friends. There's all sorts of, you know, there's Friendster, there's Facebook.
Tinder.
You'll find new folks.
Tinder can even help.
I think that Justin's theme of all of his are just be selfish.
Yeah, just save yourself.
Save yourself.
Brian?
I've got a couple more, but they're more of the, I guess, maybe notes to the director.
That's fine.
Or writer.
Just one at a time.
Type of stuff here. All right. Don't it's the wind. You know, I've lived in some pretty windy areas and I've heard the occasional branch rubbing against the, you know, the side of the house or the roof or something. And it may raise some questions on a very rare occasion as far as, you know, what could that noise be? You know, so for the most part, if the problem outside is ever the wind, you're pretty much in Twister, not a horror movie. So it's more like probably more like Friday the 13th. So blame something else. Maybe it's fireworks outside or construction, something along those lines, whatever the case is, you know, whatever, but set it up. And, you know, blame something else.
So what is your do? Because that
the
was
wind
like
gets a, the wind was, gets a bad rap.
That was like a book report.
Do blame something else.
Okay, there we go.
Do blame something else. Blame fireworks. Blame
if you hear,
construction.
If
blame,
you hear, I'm going to swallow your soul, that ain't the wind.
Right.
A house doesn't
grow. Like speaks a language.
If it speaks a language.
Yeah, if it speaks any language, get out.
It's so weird how the wind sounds like my Ozzy Osbourne record when I play it backwards. That's so odd.
Is that Latin? It's Latin wind. Weird.
Yeah. If it's Latin, run.
Scotty?
Must be El Nino.
More like El Nino. Getting out.
Don't use
different Latin?
Don't use a firearm as a weapon. Someone with a melee weapon is probably like a knife or a golf club is going to own you if you use a gun. Because that's just, it seems like that way. The people that survive are the ones that don't have the weapon you would think would survive.
Well, if you're 100% sure it's loaded and cocked and the safety's not on, then.
No, it's not going to work. When does it ever work? You always get taken down by somebody with a lesser weapon if you have a firearm.
So what do they do?
An axe, a bat, and a machete. You know what those three things have in common? No ammunition.
You don't run out.
You don't run out. And guns, most people are bad shots as it is. Amp up your adrenaline to 11. Get that hand shaking like you got Parkinson's. You ain't hitting squat.
Do invest in some kind of stab-proof clothing because you'll be just fine.
Like go to the store, right? Hold that thought,
well, I mean, if you're, you know. You got to be prepared, right? That's what the Boy Scouts say.
Do they make swimsuits out of Kevlar?
Oh.
There you go.
They're not quite as sexy, but they do make them.
It depends on what cut you get.
That's true.
All right, don't try to take on the massive killer who you just personally witnessed popping your friend's head off like a daisy. Instead, do run and treat the woods like an obstacle course. Get the heck out. Get out.
Shoot treat it like an episode of Wipeout. Just
But don't fall as much.
No, yes.
Oh, that's funny. Justin.
Don't knock the bad guy down and then just run away.
Double tap.
Do keep beating, stabbing, shooting, whatever it is you're doing. Keep doing that until they're tomato paste.
Yeah, that's a good call.
When they are down, that is when you take advantage.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, ask the Red Viper.
Yeah, exactly. Don't it's get not a horror movie, but
Brian.
Don't monologue.
I got you. You're dead. Oh, shit.
Don't wipe the steam off the mirror in the bathroom.
Yeah, that's a good one.
You know, anytime, you know, especially if there's another face or something else in the mirror, don't just keep wiping and turn around and look to see what's behind you. Just smash the mirror and just run like hell. Get out of there.
Mine's kind of similar, actually. Don't own a medicine cabinet.
Just don't even bother owning it.
Just a regular old shelf that you can just see without having to open a mirror or a door or anything on it. Just.
And shower curtains got to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Or at least be clear.
Yeah.
Be clear.
Be transparent.
Don't invite your friends to hang out at the site of a previous massacre on the anniversary of that slaughter.
Yeah.
Do be smart enough to stay out of that zip code on the night of the anniversary. Some bad shit's going to go down.
I think be aware just of your local area's bad happenings and when those anniversaries are coming up. Because you don't want to be around.
Justin, you said you're out, right?
I have used up mine.
Brian?
Don't trip while running away. I mean, if I'm frightened enough to run, you know, I'm not looking back until I'm probably crossing the county line about 6 or 7 counties away.
Yeah, yeah, I'm look over your shoulder. I mean,
yeah, exactly. I'm not looking over my shoulder. I'm running Forrest Gump style. I'm just running and running and running and running, and just, you know. And if you have to slow them down somehow, because I mean, you've got to let the inevitably just walking or, you know, strolling mass murderer or ghost, you know, catch up somehow. I mean, just do something different. Quicksand.
Quicksand.
A foam pit from like a gymnastics building or something. A pool full of Jello. I don't care. Just don't trip.
That just got sexy. A pool full of Jello sounds awesome.
I mean,
think about it. Just like sit and think for a minute. When's the last time you were running or even walking so clumsily that you tripped and didn't catch yourself and keep from falling?
I got to tell you, I jog, and I've hit the dirt quite frequently from roots and whatnot. I have gotten a real appreciation for horror movies over the last couple of years, because that one actually makes sense to me. In the dark, in the woods, trying to run, you hit roots. You really do.
Why are you running in the dark?
Because I'm being chased in the dark.
They're man-packing, and they're trying to pack some man.
Scott?
When someone gives you some kind of important advice, don't ignore or forget it.
Mm.
Do jot down a little note or put a reminder in your phone. Just saying.
Just ding.
It kind of reminds me of that trailer for that new horror movie, The Forest.
Mm-hmm.
Because as soon as it came up and it said, stay on the path, I knew bitch is getting off this path as quickly as possible.
They always do. Oh, this way is quicker. It's not marked. How is that quicker? Why are these dirt roads always faster? I don't understand.
It doesn't say bypass. There's no bypass that's the width of a bicycle.
So funny. Don't keep talking to someone in a Halloween mask that refuses to answer you. Do punch them in the junk over and over until they hit the ground, and then just keep punching them until they make a sound you realize or understand.
Yeah, you're not Tony Stark. You can't talk to the bad guy just and have a drink, a little cocktail.
Yeah. Oh, it's so cute when you scare the crap out of me. No, it's not. Hit them. Keep hitting them.
Bob, if you see a clown staring at you and you say, "Hey, what's up?" and he doesn't give you the head nod back, run. Don't walk up and try to engage him further.
Brian, you have any more?
No, I'm done.
Scott?
When waking up from a dream, don't assume that you're in the real world.
You're just in another dream.
Yeah. Do watch Inception at least once a year to remind yourself of the distinct possibility that you will be waking up in another dream.
That's a really, my mind is blown. It's a good
what
one.
What if we merged Inception with Nightmare on Elm Street?
Mm. Does the top spin? Because that's really all I need Whatever. To know. All right. Freddy.
Until these claws reach out and grab it at the end.
I got two more. I don't know how many more do you got, Scott. Do you have any more?
You know how in a movie when you finally get that chance to kick the bad guy's ass?
Mm-hmm.
When that does happen, don't use the line, "This is for blank, and this is for blank," whatever it is. You know what I'm talking about?
Like the
"This is for my mom."
Oh, yeah.
"And this is for my sister," whatever it is. It's not necessary. Who honestly doesn't know why they're getting their ass kicked?
And this isn't time for chit-chat.
Yeah. And if by some strange reason they really don't know, then do leave them a note.
On their dead body.
On their dead body.
All right. I got two more. One, don't bring home creepy-ass dolls, nor keep dolls that anyone tells you has moved or talked to them. Do light those dolls on fire. Maybe sprinkle some gasoline, get a good blaze going. Burn the shit out of them. Torch them. They're done. Yeah.
Or just go Fargo and wood chipper.
Oh, even better. If you've got a wood chipper, there goes the doll. If they say, "I can't get it out of the house," you pick it up and you walk it out. Trick it. Whatever you got to do. I don't care.
Or you move.
Exactly. Move. Don't tell the doll. They're not going to know until it's, hey, why am I still in the medicine cabinet? All right, my last one, don't ignore warnings from locals. They live there. If a few of them keep saying your new home or vacation spot is a death trap, do find better accommodations. It's important to your life. It really is. I never understand that. If I go to a new town and some guy's on the corner, "It's a death curse," I start looking into the history a little bit. Like, you know what? And then if three people say it, I leave. I'm done. Can't do this anymore.
Basically, if your real estate agent gives you a house that's too good to be true, it is.
Always.
Don't get that Amityville house. Keep looking.
Exactly.
Oh, you know what? I do have one more.
Okay.
Don't stare. Well, this one kind of was alluded to earlier with Justin's "don't be in the middle of a room," but don't just sit and stare at whatever impending danger is coming towards you without moving.
Mm-hmm.
Do calculate some kind of responsible escape strategy that keeps you and those around you safe.
Well, wait, around us? Because I thought we all decided that...
That's you guys. You guys are all the selfish ones. They're cast. I'm still looking out for my buddies.
Well, it will buy you some more time.
You'll be the first to go.
Exactly.
You'll be the one that I shoot in the leg. So you're slower to run out of there than I am.
Or just kick your kneecap out.
A buddy of mine told me this one. He wanted me to say, do maim your friends if there's a killer in the woods, or because then basically it will save you. Just leave your friend for death. Make sure they're hurt so they're stuck there.
Yeah, it's very sound logic.
Oh, how about don't run as fast as you can, but do run faster than the slowest guy there.
Yep. There you go.
You don't have to be Usain Bolt. You just got to be faster than somebody else.
Right. That's right.
All right. Works for ghosts and bears.
Now it's time for our listeners' thoughts. You guys got them? We posted these on Facebook, usually on Tuesday or so, and sometimes in the group, but usually on the Facebook page. So go to facebook.com/TheHollywoodOutsider and check there Tuesday or Wednesday. You'll see the topic for every week if you want to comment. Go ahead, guys.
David McGraw says, don't go into the bedroom or shower with the beautiful girl with the unbelievable body. Do reconsider your sexual orientation or join the priesthood.
That's good. Steve Peterson says, don't fumble with your car keys while trying to get away. Do buy a car with the keyless entry and push button start.
That's a really good point. You know how many lives would be saved if their key fob could start their car as they're running toward it?
That's true.
The door.
As if that car would start. You know. It could be the most reliable car in the world, and as soon as Jason is chasing you,
Yeah. It ain't going to start.
And if it doesn't start on the second try, you run anyway. Why do you? I'm going to give this about 8 tries before I give up and then realize he's outside my door. It's just a stupid plan. Steve had 2 of them.
And Steve also said, don't lean over the bad guy to see if he's still alive after the final attack. Do shoot or stab him in the head repeatedly while he's down.
Exactly. I think
one of us said that one already. Yep.
Empty a clip. Yep.
Amy Hutchison says, don't run up the freaking stairs or down them, for that matter, to any place that isn't ground level, unless you have easily accessible stairs leading outside.
That's a really good point.
Do invest in a Jodie Foster panic room and run straight into that shit.
Both valid points.
Both very valid, yeah.
John Parrish says, for God's sakes, people, don't split up to investigate the house. Do stay in a tight phalanx formation, preferably with automatic weapons.
We're playing Left 4 Dead.
Or 300.
That's awesome. I like that.
Josh Dima says, don't fall while running. There's Brian's. Because of poor shoe choice. High heels or sandals. Do wear some goddamn tennis shoes. Did he say goddamn?
He says goddamn. Yeah.
Goddamn tennis shoes so a branch doesn't cost you your life.
Good call. Good call.
Yeah. High heels and horror movies do not mix.
Who goes camping in high heels?
Girls.
Well, you may not be camping, but inevitably you will end up in the woods at some point.
I have seen girls camping in high heels. That's a true story.
Hmm.
I don't understand it either.
I might want to go on your camping trips again.
Now it doesn't sound so bad, does it?
Man packing sounds pretty good now all of a sudden.
You didn't tell us that part.
Or maybe they were dudes, I'm not sure. But either way, they were wearing heels.
That's something I would be sure. Anyway, Wayne Edwards says, don't sit or lay next to the zombie thinking it's dead for real. And it ain't. I just started watching The Walking Dead. I know I am way late to the party. Don't hate me, Brian. Do pickaxe or arrow everybody that growls or moans as their form of conversation. That's a good rule to live by.
Yeah, good plan.
Andrew Jeeves says, don't open that door where the monster's hiding. Instead, leave while you still can.
Mm. Yeah. Brian Lowry says, don't split up and do keep moving.
See a thread? I see a common thread.
Mm-hmm.
Dustin Baker says, don't drink, smoke, do drugs, or have premarital sex. You will die. No exceptions. Do be a virgin. Oh, and being a woman helps too. Those virgin nerdy guys don't make it sometimes.
Yeah.
I'm surprised it took us that long to get to don't have sex.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, don't have sex, don't smoke pot, don't drink. Because that's when...
Don't drink, don't smoke. What do you do? All right,
Adamant.
Wow.
Mark Shelton says, don't be the only black guy. Do pay attention to the creepy townie that tells you to stay away from X. The Walking Dead burns through black guys like a fat kid eats potato chips. That is true,
about that.
Sadly. If you're going to a party, make sure that there are more than one of you, whatever you are, at that party.
And the last one comes from Brad Peterson. He says, don't take the back roads. Stick to major highways.
Thank you. Yes.
Why do they do that in movies? Do you know?
Because the scenery. You know, you want to take that scenic route.
Is that what it is? Or is they trying to get there? They think it's going to be a shortcut or what? Is it the scenery? Is that usually what it is?
If I was going to take those back roads, it would be for the scenery.
We did have one that came in late. It said, from Paula Sell, if the bad guy, oops, person, is down and you think they're dead, don't run away. Tie them up, throw furniture on them, shoot them a few more times because they are never dead.
If you can, draw and quarter them.
Like take the time to just line them up?
Well, you got to get the 4 horses, yes, and then you got to get the rope, but I think it's worth it.
Hey, if they took the time to come back from the dead or from some supernatural place or something like that, yeah, it's the least I can do is take the time to cut them up into 4 or 5 pieces, take them to different parts of the world and burn each individual part.
Wow, that was really specific. That was oddly specific.
Just saying, I thought it out.
I guess. Why are people, even atheists, so fascinated by demonic possession? Or is it even really that exciting to people anymore? Like, that's really a big part of it. So do these films scare you? If so, why or why not, John?
I think it actually depends on the film. It can have an effect on me depending on how they depict it. You know, right now I'm thinking about the show Evil. Evil does demonic possession in such a way that it fills the gamut where it's could be somebody who's either mentally unstable, or it could be somebody who's legitimately possessed. And it kind of puts you in a position where you can't figure out what it really is. And I like that aspect of movies or shows that show the demonic possession. But when it starts getting a little bit overboard, a la Exorcist, when you got the pea soup flying out, and I never understood that whole thing, I start having problems with my ability to suspend some disbelief. I have a Catholic background. There are times where I see something and I'm like, oh, that looks like it could possibly happen, and I go along with it.
And you say your 8 Hail Marys?
8 Hail Marys, 3 Our Fathers, and I do the stand up, sit down, kneel, stand up, fight.
Yeah, that's just one. Part of the rituals, right. Just making sure your knees bend appropriately.
I feel like that's what you do on the controller to make Contra
right.
Cheat codes pop up.
Yeah, A-B, 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 select start.
Yeah, that's what I think you're doing. I don't think
that's kind of what any mass anything. Is like that's Catholic.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Man, what about you, man? Do these movies scare you ever?
Hell yes.
Really?
If there is one genre of film that will have me afraid to go to sleep at night, or will have me just unwilling to watch it in the dark at night or while alone, it's a demonic possession movie. I will watch a break-in, like a burglar strangers type movie that should terrify anybody who's like sitting home alone or something. Mm-hmm. I would much rather watch something like that than a demonic possession movie.
Why?
I don't know what it is. Well, I have like some idea. When I was a little kid, after my great grandma died, and this is going to sound really weird, but I distinctly remember like taking a shower and being like, if ghosts are real, does that mean like everybody in my family who's dead can watch me taking a shower right now? Because that's really weird and uncomfortable. And from that moment on.
Yeah.
I know. Tell me about it. From that moment on, I just kept like wondering, what if there's something in my, like behind me or next to me, and I don't know about it? And that constant like uncertainty created a fear, which then was realized through movies. But it's really ironic because one of my favorite movies when I was a little kid, and I'm talking like a young child, was Poltergeist.
I don't think anybody's possessed in Poltergeist though, right? Just ghosts. Well, I mean, the TV's possessed. Does that count?
Yeah, I mean, it's all, there's all,
it's in the
there's
same
enough.
Neighborhood.
Yeah, hmm. Yeah. If you go, if those two go trick-or-treating and they're in the same area, is what John's saying. Yeah.
I like the, I don't like, I mean, it's obviously a fear of yours, but the whole idea of, well, when people die, can they see me shower? I mean, I think everybody's probably felt that at some point, right? But I'm like, you're getting a little terrified of it. I'm sitting there going, I'm just going to prop my leg up. You're going to have to look. Look at it. Soak it in. Soak in the greatness. You know, things hilarious. Like that. I'm not scared by these in any way, shape, or form. The funny part is The Evil Dead terrified me when I was a kid. But not because of the possession. It's how they did the scares. The tree branch scene. That's enough said about that. You know, that was pretty horrifying.
Right.
And I guess, you know, when the girlfriend pops out of the cellar, that was pretty terrifying. But it was more about scary thing in the cellar than it was the possession. I don't believe in it. It's just something I don't personally believe in. And I'm not knocking anyone that does. I know many people of faith, and I'm not saying I'm an atheist. I'm just saying I don't believe in demonic possession. I don't believe in ghosts. That kind of stuff doesn't do anything for me. But that doesn't mean that the movies have never scared me. It's just that demonic possession itself doesn't scare me. My mother's favorite movie is The Exorcist. Favorite horror movie. And she wanted me to watch that so bad. Once I finally was old enough, she felt like to handle it. And I had appreciation for horror movies. And I had seen all kinds of horror by that point. And Evil Dead really, really did terrify me. So she's like, oh, The Exorcist is going to scare the crap out of you. I'm like, oh, I can't wait. And all I kept thinking is, this is just a weird movie. Like, they paid some kid to act like that. I don't, you know, with the crucifix and everything, that's just not right. There's so much wrong with this.
It's just not right. much wrong with this, he says after watching Evil Dead.
Yeah, right. I'm good with what happened to
the tree branch is one thing, but the crucifix, we're drawing a line.
That's just not right at all, man.
Right.
And not cool. So it didn't work for me, but my mother grew up in a very religious family. You know, priests, or not priests, but pastors and whatnot. So I understood, like, to her, this is something she felt was very real. I tend to look at things a different way, and I just didn't feel that way. And it didn't terrify me, ever. And I wanted it. I really, really wanted that movie to scare the crap out of me, because my mom loved it so much, and we share such a bond over movies. But I've never been scared by the idea of being possessed, because to me, and I know I'm blabbering here, but to me, the idea of being scared by something means you have to worry that it could happen to you. It has to be a fear that you have. And I don't have that natural fear. I have a fear of being cut up and a cheese grater going over my face by some crazy maniac, like in the new Evil Dead movie. But I don't have a fear of, you know, my wife getting possessed and you know, I don't have a fear. I think she might act crazy or something, but it's not going to be possessed just because I did something stupid.
Yeah, that's the thing that always fascinates me about the whole idea of possession is that people are so willing to believe in it because they call it whatever you want to call it, whether they want to believe in that we are inherently good and occasionally something gets in us that makes us evil, or whether it's something in their upbringing from a religious standpoint that makes it easier to believe in the good when you can picture the evil that can come up from the metaphysical evil that comes up from the darkness. You know, I remember a conversation I had with somebody a couple years ago where they were talking about how they were so upset that the devil got into a friend of theirs. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And he tells me the whole story of what their friend did. And I just looked at him and I said, the devil didn't get into your friend. Your friend is just a piece of garbage. You know, and he's like, well, why would you say that about my friend? He's a really good guy. He really did all these things. I was like, no, now that I know what he did, that's not the devil. That was him this entire time. And that's what I really lean into more, is that people are inherently scarier than anything some demon can put into them at this point, that I that's where I start losing the ability to believe in it anymore.
It's very interesting. I've had discussions with people. Like I said, half my family is very religious and half my family is not. So I have people on both sides that I can have real conversations with about the idea of demonic possession and things like that. And it's amazing to me how many people that are atheists that still have this fear. You know, they believe in something, obviously, if you actually have that tangible fear, right? So it's always fascinating to me. And whenever I have that discussion, you know, I don't think it really pertains so much to your faith and religion in many respects. Like, don't get me wrong, there are people that are very devout and they won't even watch things like this. Like, if there's a possession, they won't watch. They won't watch ghosts because they just feel like they don't want to, I don't know, rock the boat or.
You're inviting it into your right. life.
I hear that a lot.
Yeah. And people believe that. But there are many, many people that believe that. And I totally understand. But there are many people that don't believe in it at all, that are still terrified by it. And to me, that means I think you believe in it a little bit. There's like a piece of you that is open to the idea that this could happen, that the demons are out there and they are watching you shower.
Well, it could. Damn it.
Sorry.
It was the last line that got you.
It really was. You know, what I was going to say is that we all, in a way, want to believe in something greater than ourselves. But because we are so accustomed to seeing negative, that it's easier for us to believe that we'd ever see a demonic possession over whatever the good version of that is. You know, over the signs of the stigmata, we'd probably see a demonic possession sooner rather than later.
You know, I guess the more I think about it, maybe some of that impact for people that don't believe in religious, they don't have religious leanings or whatever, they're atheists or whatever, they are agnostic. Maybe some of that is more just the concept of your body being controlled by things you can't control. You know, maybe that's more of what it is.
That's possible too.
It's the fear and uncertainty of not knowing. You know, if this were to be possible, you wouldn't know until it happens. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing that freaks me out about it. Like, it doesn't matter if I believe that it's plausible or not. I'm a very agnostic person. And so I don't disbelieve, but I don't believe, if that makes sense. Like, I'm willing to keep an open mind, but more than likely I'm like, nah, I don't really see it in the traditional sense. Mm-hmm. But I also believe that, you know, I would be naive to think that it's just us and this world or this universe or anything like that. So
what? No,
I know.
Just
I
us. Know it's, just us right here. There's nobody else outside of this room.
Nobody but us three.
Yeah, that's it.
And so, like, it's not that I anticipate, you know, getting a call and it's like, oh, your mom or your dad is possessed by a demon. Time to come home. I don't anticipate that being a scenario I'm ever going to be in the position to deal with. But when I see that on screen, hell yeah, that's going to scare me. I'm going to say no, run away immediately, go the other direction.
Run!
What are you doing? Like, none of these courses of action would I be taking if I were in that position. And but it's really just about, like, if you're able to put yourself in their shoes and you can truly live vicariously while watching a movie, it's easy to get sucked into that and scared by what you would have to deal with if you were in that position. And that's how I interpret it.
I'm trying to picture that phone call. Oh, John, God, I hate to break it to you, but your father is possessed. You're going to have to come home. I'll be, I'm sorry, who's this?
Bring your cross with you, right? Like in your holy water.
Who's this? It's Father Tony. I'm sorry, Father Tony. You're breaking up. Wrong number. Right? I am neither an old priest or a young priest. You're calling the wrong person. Bye.
God, my phone call would be like this. That's nonsense. Like, get them to a hospital. They need mental health care. Bam. Well, I'm sorry. This 6-year-old daughter is jamming a cross up her crotch. You know what? This is very concerning. Let's not look at the devil. Let's take her to psychiatric care. Can we do that?
Also, why does she have a cross? Take that away from her.
Yeah, she's been spinning her goddamn head around. Like, at some point, we need to realize this girl is not well.
But here's the thing. The other aspect of demonic possession is them doing things that, in like, for a regular human would kill them. And you're watching that play out and it doesn't kill that person because they're still have possession of the body. That alone is terrifying when you think about it. Like, you don't have to believe that that's real, but you can believe that, you know, Judy's head wasn't supposed to do that 20 yeah, minutes ago.
That's like fair. Like little Reagan's head. I mean, she would so need a chiropractor.
Yeah, head would pop off like a Barbie from a 4-year-old.
Mama had a baby and her head actually did pop off. It's very disheartening. That's funny. I'll be honest, if like Evil Dead, right? So girlfriend gets possessed and then, you know, you think at times that, oh, well, the demon's out, so she's acting normal again. You know, they've kind of playing that game demons like to play in these movies.
Right.
And let's say you actually leave there and the demon comes with you, like a fallen situation. I think all I would ever think about is, she gonna turn. Like, there's no way that's all the way out. So if I did believe in that, I would we would break up as soon as we got back home.
Immediately.
Yeah, have to.
Back? What do you mean back? You ain't coming with me.
Well, they're in the car. Ride. They're in the car with you. You got to take them home because you don't want to be the guy that leaves them at the Necronomicon house.
Since when?
You're right. Just leave them there.
I feel like, girl, you were possessed a few minutes ago. I ain't taking chances. Like, I'm sorry. I'll call you an Uber.
Look, I like you and everything, but you said some really crazy shit. I got to go. You're staying here.
You tried to eat my organs. Like, I'm going to have to say no.
That's funny.
Fallen is such a great example, though.
Fallen is a wonderful reinvention of the whole possession thing. That one was really fun. I thought that was really fun. Very clever. Do you find that it's more impactful for people that are religious, though, that seem to have that built-in belief because of, you know, their spiritual beliefs and whatnot? And I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, people believe whatever they believe. I don't care what you believe. It doesn't affect me.
I really feel like the people who are that religious don't watch these types of movies. And the people that are willing to watch them are people who, even if they have some level of belief, it's not that incredibly strong. You know what I mean? Like, they have the ability to deny the plausibility of it. enough to the point where you could sit through that. Like, I don't think anybody who's like, hell yeah, Graham's got possessed last week is going to like go to the movies and be like, let's watch Exorcist together. Let's figure out how we can save Graham's. Like, that's not what they're going to be doing.
Yeah, I have taken a poll of my mother's side of the family. And keep in mind, she's not very religious, but her family is. And nobody would watch them.
Yeah.
Nobody. Nobody. And I know my wife's family is very religious. Nobody will watch them. So I think it feels very right in that respect that people that really believe heavily in this potential just would not want to watch those kinds of movies for whatever their reasons.
I think more often than not, the reason is that they're not looking to invite whatever it is home with them.
Yeah, and I understand that. Yeah, Amanda, I mean, that's what Amanda alluded to earlier. Makes sense, right?
No, and I've had those conversations with friends of Latin descent. I'm not going to watch that. Why not? Well, because if I watch that, it's going to come home with me, and that's not going to be good. You know that's not real, right? No, well, I'm not taking a chance.
See, I never say that because just because I don't believe in something doesn't mean that there's not a possibility of it. You know, unless you got some way to prove that it doesn't exist, which I don't have a way to prove it. You know, I just know that it hasn't happened that I've seen it, but you know, we've all dated crazy, right? So you never know. Maybe
it was possessed. That's actually a really good point though. Like you would think that, especially in the year 2023, that if people were out here getting possessed, there would be a TikTok of it. There would be a live stream on somebody's YouTube or Instagram.
Yeah, they would stop trying to help them and say, just film it.
Right? Immediately. Yeah. And I got to be honest, I haven't heard about any possession since like the early 1900s. So either we did something right, the plague maybe did more than we thought, or it was never real to begin with.
Did you just say the 1900s?
Yeah, I don't feel like I've heard of any demonic possessions. Since the night, so like, I'm talking like 1930,
the 20th century.
Yeah, okay. I'm not talking about 1994.
I still felt it. It just like it was like somebody walked over my grave.
That's called the demon that's coming through your body right now.
Oh,
that's right.
Hi, when George.
You feel like that?
Cuddles.
Hairs on the back of your neck. Stand up.
My sleep paralysis demon are going to be going at it again tonight.
Somebody in your bathroom watching you bathe.
What are you doing with your sleep paralysis demon?
Mostly
you're not
holding
supposed to
hands.
Be doing that stuff.
You guys are making this weird. All right. Do you have any personal stories of people possessed or seemingly possessed? Have you ever seen anything like this or heard of anything like this?
I have never personally or seen anything like this. But I have heard stories, and I've heard stories because I'm from a Latin country, and that sort of thing runs rampant in Latin countries.
Superstitions, right?
You know, superstitions were a big thing. And I, you know, and as a kid, I was wildly superstitious. And as, you know, as time progressed, and as I stopped seeing the kind of weird stuff I used to see, I stopped believing in such a thing as possible anymore. So it's weird how time does that to us. I don't have any personal stories now.
I don't know. I got to say my experience makes me believe it more, more likely. Not my own personal experience, but I've dated, to John's point, enough Hispanic people and been friends with enough Hispanic people and heard their stories and their grandparents' stories. And, you know, like when you hear somebody tell you their story, it's hard to be like, damn, you real crazy, ain't ya? Like, sometimes you have to be like, damn, they've seen some stuff. It's been real. And then you have to wonder, are the demons following them? Because if they got more than one story, you and I have some concerns to address with you. That's how I feel.
Okay.
Yeah, no, my stories all go back to normal ghost stories of things that I've experienced that way, but nothing with a demon in possession.
I think that there's a level before you get to like full on possession. Like, I do believe that if there is legitimacy to it, just like how they kind of try to tell you in The Conjuring, there are stages.
Under the shirt, but over the bra, is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, it sounds like it. Some butt rubbing.
He's basically like, what he's trying to tell you in the movie is like, they start by slowly entering into your world and migrate themselves into breaking you down until you become, quote unquote, weak enough to be possessed by the demon because of the like somewhat level of insanity that it's brought you to. And so I do think that there is potential merit in all of those possibilities. And I also think that it's possible, like, if you tell me that you've seen that or you've experienced that, who am I to tell you that, no, you didn't experience that? I just have to be like, damn, I hope I never experienced that. Yeah.
Refresh my memory. That was Fred Warren in the movie that said that, right?
Said what?
That whole thing.
About the stages?
Yeah, the stages.
The husband?
Was it the husband or was it Fred?
It was Ed. It was Ed.
Yeah, Ed Warren. That's who it was. Yeah. I said Fred. Yeah.
Fred Warren.
I have my own problems with Ed Warren.
It's like, I'm a big Sanford and Son fan and also a Conjuring fan, and I just can't keep those straight.
I really can't.
Interesting. Yeah, well, the Warrens are, that's not really a fair comparison, because some half people think that they're just making shit up and half people really believe in everything they were doing. So,
well, I mean, that's like that's what all of our society is. Half of our society is, it believes that there's legitimacy and possibility to these things happening. And so it's easy to believe people like the Warrens, whether they had legitimacy or not. And then there's the other side of the society that's like, no, I'm not going to believe that. That seems ludicrous to me, because logically thinking this, how do the physics of that work? And how does, you know, like, I've never experienced a breakthrough in a barrier, you know, if it's supposed to be like different realms or something. Like, if you don't buy into it, that's fine. There's going to be a lot of people who don't, but there are definitely a lot of people who do, from a lot of times their own experience or their family's experiences.
I dated a girl long time ago who believed very, very vividly in demonic possession, and that she had been possibly possessed at one point. And it was, we didn't date long because it was I'm not the person to date in that circumstance. I can't have that conversation without basically just mocking everything about it. So this was when I was younger and less sensitive. Yeah.
What's Lord that like? Knows he hasn't gotten more.
Yeah, I haven't gotten more sensitive, but I didn't necessarily handle that as well as I should have. But I also thought this is more of a psychology issue than I think it is a demonic issue. And that's a lot of stories that I heard. My mother worked in psychology for 30 years, and I did hear quite a lot of those kinds of stories where people thought that they were victims of demonic possession or being haunted or something. And then a lot of it was a psychological issue of different varieties. So there is some validity to the idea that people might believe it, but it might be something other than what you think. You know, you might have something going on that you need to get checked out. So when it comes to demonic possession,
this man just like psychology splained y'all. He's like, if you think that you're experiencing a demonic possession, I need you to know you have schizophrenia. Yes. Go get medication.
You might want medication.
It's like there's Jonah Hill and then there's Aaron.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, when it comes to demonic possession films, I mean, I don't really have that many other than Evil Dead that I'm a big fan of. Conjuring, I enjoy the first one a lot. I do want to mention The Entity, because I feel like it's Barbara Hershey, where she believes she's being possessed and this demon is essentially like violating her. And I don't know if it's necessarily counts as a possession movie, because she's not necessarily inhibited, but she's being violated by the demon, sexually. It's a really interesting story, and I've never seen it told like that, and it was just very odd. So if you've never seen it, very good movie, but very odd. Barbara Hershey is fantastic in the performance. If you've never seen it, I highly recommend checking out The Entity. Anything you guys can think of that you want to mention, a shout out, like, check this out, this is worth the watch?
For me, on the top of that list has to be The Exorcist 3. I don't know why that one's my favorite one of all three of the movies. I think it has a lot to do with the fact that they take the Exorcist story and they add this serial killer aspect to it, and they make it pretty interesting. And it's George C. Scott being George C. Scott, so I can't really miss out on that. And then Insidious, which is a series of movies now that has come out that has different forms of possession that happens throughout that movie. I really like what they're doing with that, because it's just a very interesting way of handling possession and handling ghosts and all that. And it's a good, beautiful story so far. So those are the two that I can think of off the top of my head.
So I'm going to tell you one that I've talked about before, and I would say that it's somewhat demonically possessed.
Okay.
Maybe. Because it seems that way, at least for a while. And that's Gothica.
Mm.
That movie, there is something about it. I just freaking love that movie. And once you really know, like, what's going on, like, it is a dark film when you, like, start watching from beginning. Yeah, that movie just so good. Halle Berry. Basically, this psychiatrist that ends up waking up on the other side of the wall, the bars, and she's trying to figure out what happened because she has no recollection of murdering this person, but apparently she did, and she was exposed to something that she's trying to work through right now. I don't know. I'm really bad at teetering around the
it's full been summary out of it. For a while.
I know, but I can't tell people I want you to watch this if you haven't seen it, and that's then tell fair. Them all the spoiler
and
of
I'm
it.
Pretty sure it's on Max, so you can see it there. I believe it's on Max.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
This is real quick just a story on possession, and that is Paranormal Activity.
Yep.
And I've told this story on the podcast before, but gosh darn it, the first time I watched that at like a midnight showing, packed full theater, I literally, and I'm not joking, could not even pee with the bathroom door shut. I was like unwilling to do it. The hall light's going to be on. I'm going to have the light on. And I was like, look, I'm going to leave the door open because if something happens, A, I want to know, and B, I don't want to be trapped in here. And if I do see the door move, at least then I know for certainty that I am not crazy and that there is something in here about to get me. And it's going to take me out like it took her out. Whew. That's it.
Wow. Those movies do like freak me out, but mostly because of the way that they execute the scares. Like, it's just very subtle.
100%. Yeah. And to be fair, I also thought that this was like a real experience. Like, I was young and I was naive and the internet wasn't what it is today. So
it still scares me. I've watched the first couple a few times and they still get me.
The first couple are so great.
They are.
It jumps to shark when it gets really bad, but yeah, the first couple were great.
The one where they implemented the Xbox Kinect or whatever.
Oh God, yeah.
That was a good one. It was so clever. It was really clever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really impressed with that one. All right, so listener comments. We asked people like what was your favorite or why do you like possessed movies, that sort of thing. And we each have one that we wanted to discuss. And mine is from Comte de Interrompe. The mother of my best friend in high school thought that The Exorcist was the scariest film of all time and refused to let her children watch it. After hearing this, I sought the movie out and watched it. I get you. I feel where you're coming from. While I thought the movie was well done, I could not see the scariest movie of all time, or a scariest movie ever hype. After much thought, I realized that I wasn't scared because I had no fear of demonic possession, including my friend's mom did. And I agree with you 100%. And the reason why I bring that up when I've already kind of talked about it is, but my mother was never like that devout, but she grew up in a very religious household. So I think even though she didn't necessarily go to church regularly and that sort of thing, she believes in something else out there. And I, you know, she's very agnostic. I'm not saying she's religious or not, because I honestly don't know for sure. We've talked about it, but she's very hard read on this subject because she wants everybody else to come to their own conclusions. She doesn't want to influence yours. But I know she grew up in a very religious household, so I know that had to be in her head when she saw that movie. And I think that's a huge factor why it's terrified her so much.
So Sandra Grzynski, and I really hope I got that right, Sandra, but I feel very confident. Being brought up Catholic and hearing a nun talk about caring for a possessed woman, I was eager to see The Exorcist. It really terrified me. I had read the novel when it first came out, and that frightened me as well. None of the movies featuring demonic possession following the original movie bothered me at all. See, I love this comment because what we're hearing is basically the influence of our environment before we go see a movie and how that impacts how scared we get or how we're going to react to it. So if you go into it kind of like I did with Paranormal Activity and you're like, oh, this is real, it's going to make it that much more terrifying. And just like she was like, oh, I was caring for a possessed woman, this nun was, and it was terrible, and she tried to eat my face. And then Sandra goes to see The Exorcist and she's like, psh, this girl tried to eat her face.
Like I said earlier, I really believe most things that scare you are because you yourself believe this is possible in some aspect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I totally believe every time I went to camp, I was going to get cut up by some freaking maniac with a hockey mask. Couldn't even walk around at night. I was freaked out.
That's awesome.
And that's a big part why I started backpacking. I wanted to confront those fears. So.
Oh, look at you growing and developing.
Oh,
I mean, well, in some ways.
I guess it's possible, but not. All right. Mac Herring says, The Order is one of my favorite movies just because of the message behind some of the characters. For me, if you base anything in a possession movie on real Catholic rules, fear, or actual cases, it gets pretty terrifying. So I like this comment a lot because, as I've alluded to in the at the beginning of this conversation, I grew up pretty Catholic, and I grew up looking at things through that lens in a lot of ways, and it had that Latin feel to it because of the way I did grow up, because of from a Latin country, and I would say that yes, at one point in my life, I did have whenever something followed those Catholic rules or those Catholic fears, it would really get to me. But it would get to me because I was really fascinated by the idea of the fight between good and evil, angels and demons, and all that other stuff. And not necessarily in the sense that it would kill me, but or hurt me, but more so like the actual fight that would get to me in some respects when I used to be more of a believer, that sort of thing. But the more you submerge yourself in a idea or ideology that would take you down these roads, the easier it is to see yourself in those positions, which that's the whole trick, isn't it? To be able to see yourself in that position and then let those feelings run you over.
Yeah, absolutely. And before we head out of here, we're going to do very quickly, but we're going to do how do you survive. So that is where we come up with a scenario and you have to tell us how you're going to live. So the scenario is you come home to find someone you love is believed to be possessed by a demon. You can confront the demon head on. You can go full on Evil Dead, mutilate them, or you can simply flee. Whatever you want, like, or a mix of the things. How do you survive this attack from the undead, John?
You know, I thought about this long and hard for about 5 seconds.
Yep, there we go. That sounds right.
I would love to be able to say that I would walk into the room, see somebody possessed, and I would say, okay, I'm gonna do the job of the young priest and old priest by myself, and I'm going to go ahead and do something about this. But in reality, this is going to be much like the knock at the door scenario where I'd be like, oh, Troy, are you possessed by a stab, 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 stab.
Fair enough. Amanda, how do you survive?
Mine is, I had to think even less about.
Oh.
So I get home or whatever, and I see someone that I love possessed by a demon. Immediately, I'm not even taking a second glance. I am leaving. I am vacating the premises. I'm getting in my vehicle, putting it in reverse, and I am hitting that gas. I'm gone. Now, will I call a priest on my way out of town? Absolutely. I got you, boo-boo. I will help you out from afar. But let me tell you, there's no question. I'm gone.
Wow. Well, your devotion is inspiring.
I know.
Jesus.
That is not something I'm playing with. Look, here's the other part of it that we haven't talked about. You know what? The reality is, if you remove the demon from that body, it's going to another body. So better you than me.
Fair. So I love that, right? Amanda's whole solution is all you're going to hear is a door shut and wheels screeching because I'm out.
Yep.
Well, mine, it's fairly obvious. I'm calling a freaking psychiatrist. I don't believe you're possessed. I think you've got some issues that you need to address. And if you do start, getting like full on Evil Dead and, you start bleeding from the pores and all that, and you look like you're going to, I really need to start filming because I need this on record that you are coming at me like this because nobody's going to believe the possession angle. So I need a little bit more to, which is funny. Whole country's founded on under God we trust and all that jive. But boy, if you come out there with my possession angle, that's not going to fly. Well, yeah, my girlfriend was possessed. Sure she was. Sure.
I had to shoot her, officer. This is why.
Sure.
She was possessed. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I swear to God, you chained her in the cellar because she was possessed. I swear.
Yeah.
I swear.
When you put it like that, you just don't have a chance but to leave.
No.
Yeah.
You gotta go.
Definitely. Yeah. Definitely wasn't because she was trying to leave or anything like that.
Exactly. You gotta get. Actually, I'm kind of leaning on Amanda's plan. I don't even want to call the psychiatrist anymore. Like, this is your problem. I gotta go.
Look, And if it, they wholly, especially if they really believe and they're acting like they're possessed, I, by all means, I will call every number in the book. I got you. But the good thing is these cell towers connect from all over the country.
I don't know, though, man. If you think about it, like, okay, so you and your significant other, right? You're in this cabin alone and you and they get possessed. Isn't that kind of saying, you know, you're not weak enough, right? They're a little too weak.
I was the stronger candidate.
I'm obviously the one that was chosen to survive. Good luck.
You know, there's that. There's also,
you know, when you put it like that,
if the demon you know, jumps in my body, the demon's going to be like, whoa, do you feel like this all the time? I'm like, yeah, I feel like this all the time. The
demon gets depressed and can't even do it. The demon goes ER and is like, I'm so sad.
I don't want a sad
demon. I just
demon.
Needed a friend.
What's the matter?
Demon leaves at their own volition, just says, yeah. I'm done.
Not wanted here. Oh.
He's the demon's going to be like, your knees feel like this all the time? Yeah, my knees always feel like this.
My back feels like
What about your back? I mean, how can you even turn your back? Nope, I can't really turn my back too much. My hip's garbage. The demons been like,
oh, they're going to ask for a refund.
I can't do this. And I'm like, yeah, I know. It's terrible in here.
That's funny. Nonsense. Just nonsense. Nonsense. But I would totally like put a chainsaw on my hand if I had the opportunity.
I'd rather have the hand.
Who wouldn't?
I'd rather have the hand. Fair point. Touche.